Hello and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I'm the titular Jim, and tonight we'll be discussing some new Netflix original releases, as well as a new edition of Jim Goes to the Movies, and capping it off with Bonnie and Clyde and The Highwaymen, two films about the outlaw and the lawman's side of a pretty exciting epic manhunt. For more content you may enjoy, please check out Manga Me Players on our Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get into it. Right, so I just got home from the theater, having seen Us, and wow, it's something else, let me tell you. This is going to be a little bit of a different Jim Goes to the Movies segment, just in terms of, like, it's going to be a little shorter. It's going to be, you know, it's not going to be quite so much stuff in this segment, just because, for one thing, it's a horror film, so, and there's, you know, just a bunch of bonkers stuff that goes on in it, but also, you know, great twist ending, so I don't want to give anything away, and also, it's Jordan Peele, so, I haven't talked about Get Out yet on the podcast. And I definitely want to do kind of a Jordan Peele episode, so I'm going to save most of the stuff for that episode, and that'll make a kind of a spoiler casty type of an episode. For now, anyway, wow, like, what a good movie, you know. You guys know, if you've listened to a lot of my episodes, I don't really talk about horror movies that much. Actually, I don't think I've talked about any horror movies really at all. For the most part, just because I don't really watch a lot of horror stuff, you know, it's not really my jam. There's not a lot of really great, great horror movies out there. And when I say great, great, what I mean is, you know, stuff like Get Out or Us, you know, something that's worthy of an Academy Award, something that's, you know, just unique and different. Because a lot of the stuff out there is just slasher fix, just gore fests, you know. I mean, even the stuff that I like, kind of like The Purge, you know, like, I like the first Purge with Ethan Hawke, but I actually prefer the more action-y ones, you know, like Anarchy and Election Night, as opposed to more of the straight-up horror stuff, you know? For me, still, like, one of the best ones out there is going to be that original Straw Dogs by Sam Peckinpah with Dustin Hoffman. That's just this really kind of deranged kind of just, but it's also very cerebral. It's about trying to get in your head. The filmmakers are trying to get in your head about stuff. And that's the kind of horror stuff that interests me. Because if it's just straight up slasher gore fest kind of stuff, that kind of turns me off. I mean, even I watched the new Halloween a while ago when it came out on digital, and, you know, I kind of like the Halloween movies and, you know, the Friday the 13th stuff, and Jason, you know, is all right. You know, it's still like, it's, you know, just, it's kind of eh. I mean, I did like the David Gordon Green Halloween, you know, it's good. But, you know, there's just not a lot of unique voices doing horror stuff right now, which is why I appreciate Jason Blum of Blumhouse Productions. You know, he's kind of tapped into this sort of finding these unique voices to produce their films and stuff like that. And Jordan Peele is definitely one of these just incredible new filmmakers that's just doing really extraordinary stuff, you know. This movie, if you don't really know what it's about, I'm not even going to get into it, because it's better to just go in blind, honestly. Even if you watch the trailer for it, like, I wouldn't even watch the trailer. you know, like, maybe listen to a couple of other episodes of mine where I review movies and stuff like that. And, you know, if you've seen the movie and you agree with what I'm saying, you know, then you can kind of, you know, trust that, you know, our we have a similar taste or similar thought process when it comes to films and TV shows and whatnot. And you can just kind of take my word for it that you should just go and see the movie as opposed to, you know, like, looking into it and, like, don't watch interviews with Jordan Peele or the cast or anything like that. Just go see the movie, and then you can do all that other stuff. Just go, if you go in blind on this movie, it's honestly the best thing for you. I think I saw the trailer for this, like, maybe once when it first dropped, like, 6 months ago or something like that. And I haven't watched anything, no other promotional material with the exception of the posters that we have at my job. And then there's this thing called Trailer Vision, which is this big, you know, TV on the wall, and it cycles through, you know, ads and stuff for up and coming movies. And it would display the poster that has Lupita Nyong'o. I totally butchered her name, but and she's got this mask, and it's like obscure, like it's like she's taking the mask off, and it's like a mask of her face doing a different expression, and then her underneath the mask, and she's got this like creepy smile going on, and it's like obscuring, like, you know, half of her face or so. And it just creeped me the hell out. And so every time it would pop up on the Trailer Vision, I'd have to try and time it so that I wasn't looking at the Trailer Vision, because it just kept freaking me out, you know. Like, I would, you know, I got this Fallout smartwatch that, you know, tracks my steps. So if I'm working in the box office, I'm pacing back and forth trying to get my steps in, as many steps as I can, because, you know, I'm stuck in the box office and there's nowhere I can go. You know, I'll be pacing back and forth, and then I'll get to the one end of the box office, and then I'll turn around and look, and there was the damn poster, and I'd just be like, not again. And it's not like the super duper terrifying image or anything like that, but something about it just got under my skin. And that's definitely something that Jordan Peele is very, very good at, is just like getting inside, at least for me anyway, getting inside my head and getting under my skin. He definitely is doing stuff that freaks me the hell out. Like, just freaks me the fuck out, man. So yeah, this movie is so, so good. Like I said, I don't do a lot of horror stuff, so I'm probably not the best judge of, like, what the greatest horror films of all time are or anything like that, but I would definitely say that Us, I think, is the best horror movie I've ever seen in my life. It's just extraordinary. And one of the things I like about this particular movie too is that you can see the love for filmmaking in it. And I don't mean like there's references, like in terms of like camera work or lighting, and, you know, like, or the music, or, you know, how this or that goes. Like, everything is pretty much unique to this film. Like, there's not really, you know, there's not really any Hitchcockian stuff going on, or M. Night Shyamalan-y thrillery stuff going on, or, like, you know, just there's nothing really that I can tie this movie to another horror film, or any other movie for that matter. It's pretty much wholly original and unique, and that's awesome too, because there's not a lot of movies like that that are just like, I've never seen anything like this before. I think it's just the best horror film I've ever seen. It's just absolutely incredible, you know? And I can't wait to watch it again, you know? It's just like, and I don't even understand, like, that's the other reason I don't want to get too far into it, is because I definitely need to see it again. So that's probably what'll happen when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray and digital and stuff. I'll buy it and do like a full on review, get a little spoiler casty on it. Because it was like that movie Annihilation with Natalie Portman. Like, I don't really know what to think about the movie right now, other than I really enjoyed it. It was just an exciting piece of filmmaking, you know? Like, you can just see how much Jordan Peele likes to make movies. just by watching one of his movies. Because, I mean, I don't even know. It's very tough to describe, but, you know, it was just so damn good. It was just really, really, really amazing. The cast was fantastic, you know, especially all... Never mind, I'm not, because that spoils a little bit. But it was just really, it was really, really great. It was absolutely wonderful and fantastic and amazing, and I loved it so much. And I can't wait to watch it again, and I can't wait to see what Jordan Peele cooks up next. Because if he does another horror film, it's... I mean, like, his talent and his skill has been evident from day one, you know, like, going back to him doing Key and Peele, and then the movie that him and Keegan-Michael Key did, Keanu, was just hilarious and amazing. But now him directing is just, like, this whole other level. Like, he's just accessed this talent that is just extraordinary, and it's blossoming and coming forth, and it's absolutely wonderful to watch this, you know, another, you know, great up and coming filmmaker just be killing it. Just super incredible. And that's another episode that I'm going to do pretty soon, is this other guy, S. Craig Zahler, because I watched his newest movie about a week ago with Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn, called Dragged Across Concrete, and it was just extraordinary. It's just really nice to have a couple of these, you know, new filmmakers that are only, you know, S. Craig Zahler has only done 3 so far, Jordan Peele's just done the 2, and it's just really exciting to see movies like this from a filmmaker that's got such a unique voice and style. Because especially in the horror genre, you know, everything is, like I said, it's, you know, like, a lot of it's the same. You know, it's just slasher flicks and, you know, gore fests and stuff like that. So to see something like this that's just unique and original and not like anything else is just really awesome. All right, so that's going to do it for this latest segment of Jim Goes to the Movies. Stay tuned. I've got some Netflix originals that I'm going to be talking about, and then we're going to be talking about the Bonnie and Clyde movies, Bonnie and Clyde and The Highwaymen, which The Highwaymen is also a Netflix original. So a little bit Netflix original heavy in this episode, but still... this is what I've been watching, so this is what I'm talking to you guys about. All right, I'm going to take a little break, come back, and we're going to be talking about those Netflix originals, and then some Bonnie and Clyde stuff after that. So stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss. So to start this episode off, I figure I'll go with some of the Netflix original television shows that were coming up, that one of them I discussed in the previous episode, being the Trailer Park Boys animated series. I haven't got through all of it yet because I've been watching some other stuff, but so far it's absolutely hilarious. Because the genius of this move to make it animated after that fantastic final season with Jim Dunsworth as Jim Leahy, and then continuing that animated joke through to the new season, absolutely fantastic, just genius. And just opens up so many possibilities and places they could go, just in terms of, you know, the crazy gunfights and action sequence type stuff that they do, story and plot lines they can explore, Just all kinds of amazing doors are open. And that's the nice thing about a television show like Trailer Park Boys is they always seem to find more doors to open as opposed to, pathways being cut off from them. They always seem to find something new, something fresh, some way of always keeping it original in some way, shape, or form for them. Just something new for us, the audience, that either we weren't expecting, we didn't see coming, or just something that we just didn't think about. Like, I'm sure nobody ever thought, like, oh, what if they all got really, really high and had a group hallucination, and they made the show animated for a little while, so I don't think any of us saw that coming, and it's really cool to know that there's another show out there that's just able to constantly keep giving us new stuff as opposed to recycling the same old thing over and over again, which a lot of long-running TV shows eventually end up doing. I mean, even MASH, you go back to MASH, and they did some stuff in the first 3 or 4 seasons that they ended up repeating towards the end, and like the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th seasons. But now, to be fair, in MASH they did change things about it. So, like, there was an episode in season 3 called Officer of the Day, where this guy Colonel Flagg shows up, and he's this intelligence guy. And most of the time during the show, he's portrayed as being quite buffoonish and very comical. He's just this really ridiculous, over-the-top, absurd character. Who just brings a lot of comedy to the situation. But in this particular episode, his kind of bloodthirsty the bloodthirsty aspect of his character is really what's on display. And so he shows up at MASH, and Hawkeye is what's known as Officer of the Day. So that means a junior officer is in charge of running the base, while so that the senior officer can have a break and take a day off. So he shows up with this Korean that he's shot, and says to Hawkeye, "I want you to fix this guy up so we can take him down to Seoul, interrogate him, and then execute him." And Hawkeye's like, "Well, that's not going to fly with me." And it doesn't matter to him whether or not people are quote bad or good, or if they're North Korean military, or if they're South Korean military, or American, or Turkish, or German, or whatever. He doesn't care what nationality, what side you're on. All he cares about is fixing your wounds and healing you, and getting you healthy again. Because he's a doctor, so that's what he does. He does doctor stuff, and so he's just like, that's not gonna fly for me. And they pull a little switcheroo, and they get the guy away from Flag, and everything's all good. Later on, I forget which season it is off the top of my head. I think it's season 8 or season 9. There's an episode called Gorilla My Dreams, which is very, it's pretty much the exact same thing, just the characters and the situation's a little different. It's a South Korean intelligence military guy, South Korean military intelligence guy, and he brings in a gorilla, this woman who, took some shots at him. Supposedly they shot back, they got the hits, she didn't, and so they bring her to MASH to fix her up so that they can take her down to Seoul and interrogate her and then execute her. And they try to pull the same stunt, but it just doesn't work out this time around. So stuff like that can happen with a TV show. But Trailer Park Boys, I know that seemed really weird. I just started talking about MASH all of a sudden for no reason. But Trailer Park Boys is interesting too, because the structure of it is, at the end of every season they go to jail. So every se excuse me. So every season ends the same way, but they change it, so like sometimes it's just Julian and Ricky that go to jail. Sometimes it's all three of them. Sometimes it's Julian and Bubbles that go to jail. Sometimes, you know, there's different, you know, sometimes it's Mr. Leahy that goes to jail. The thing is that at the end of the season, somebody's going to jail. And that just, you know, that's just their formula. But who goes to jail, and then, you know, the consequences of that it has on the park and the rest of the people are always different. So, you know, like when Julian and Leahy and Randy go to jail, I think at the end of season 3, you know, then you have Ricky and Bubbles, who are now in charge of, who now control the park, because they're the trailer park supervisor and assistant trailer park supervisor, respectively. So, you know, you just have these interesting ways of, you know, who goes to jail, the context of that, and then the consequences that we see when it picks up next season, and then, you know, whoever it is gets out of jail, comes back and sees what has happened in the interim since they've been gone. So, you know, for this time, you know, at the end of the previous season, everybody went to jail, and then everybody's hallucinating, but then they get out, and now the whole world's animated. So it's just this really crazy kind of what is going on type of a thing, which is just endlessly entertaining. I'm definitely going to be keeping up with Trailer Park Boys, obviously, because I'm a huge fan of it. And I decided not to, you know, worry about seeing the entire season right now, because, you know, I definitely want to do a big, big Trailer Park Boys kind of special, you know, talk about the entire show and the movies and, you know, all this other stuff, just the entire Trailer Park Boys universe, you know, like the crews that they had, you know, just all this stuff. So, like, just a big old Trailer Park Boys special, you know, have a bunch of guests on, stuff like that. So, definitely going to look forward to that, you guys listening to it, and me looking forward to doing that. moving on, I didn't mention it in the previous episode because I totally forgot about it because of all these other originals that were coming out that kind of blinded, kind of gaslit me. And I totally forgot about this, but it's one of my favorite Netflix shows. It's one of my favorite new shows, period. The Santa Clarita Diet. Again, I don't want to get too into it, because I definitely want to do a whole episode on the show. It's got its third season. It was just so good. I mean, every season of the show just gets better and better. If you don't know what the show is about, it stars Drew Barrymore and Timothy Olyphant. They play a realtor, that's their pronunciation, couple, Joel and Sheila Hammond. And one day, Sheila, played by Drew Barrymore, to perfection, by the way, throws up a lot. And some stuff is just seems a little weird. And turns out that she is now undead. You know, don't want to use the Z word, as they said in Shaun of the Dead. But yeah, she's a zombie, but she's, you know, fully functional and whatnot. So in this universe, with zombies, you can actually, like, if you recall, you know, like, most of the zombie stuff that has gone down in the past two decades or so, there's been a much greater progression in terms of the makeup applied, and so, like, there's more and more decay as time goes on, and so the zombies look... Sorry about that. Had a little technical difficulty there. What I was saying was that... you know, the more time goes on in the world you know, it takes place in, whatever show or movie or whatever, the more time goes on, the more decrepit and, you know, decayed the zombies start to look. And, you know, so, like, you go back to the remake of Dawn of the Dead that Zack Snyder did, written by James Gunn. You know, at the top of the movie, zombies can run. They, you know, they just have whatever the initial wound is that turned them into the undead, and then by the time you get to the end of the movie, you know, most of them can't move too fast. Some of them can, but, you know, and they're all decayed and all icky and gross and, you know, just like they look like a corpse. And so that's what goes on with Santa Clarita Diet as well. But there's a, we find out that there's a serum and it can lock off the decay so that you can, you know, maintain at least what, you know, so that, you know, you don't end up being this gross corpse-like, you know, type of zombie. Which is really cool, you know. So just a lot of really cool ideas, you know, different ways to go in terms of zombies and, you know, kind of a new mythos and a mythology, just original thinking kind of a deal. Because, you know, there's been all kinds of reasons for why the undead become the undead. You know, the original, the king of all zombie movies, Night of the Living Dead by the, you know, amazing George A. Romero. You know, it was a satellite with space dust and that, you know, screwed up the program. You know, viruses and infections, and then people are going to say, oh, well, what about the monkey virus from 28 days later? And, okay, they're not zombies, first off. It's a rage virus. It has nothing to do. It does not turn them undead. It's a rage virus that activates the anger centers of the brain and turns them into uncontrollable anger monsters, not fucking zombies, all right? So, I don't want to hear it. 28 days later, it's not a zombie movie. It's amazing, don't get me wrong, they're not zombies, so shut up. That's a very sore subject with me, so just don't do it, okay? Because because you are wrong, and I will prove you wrong, and then you'll be wrong, and you'll be sad. So just accept your wrongness, and let's move on with our lives, because you're wrong, they're not zombies. So anyway, I've argued this with Heath so many times, it's ridiculous. Before we like started like Morning Mangami and Nightcap with Jim, we had this other thing that we were doing, and we argued it on that, and I got pretty heated for me anyway. Like, he's like, bro, calm down. I'm like, no, I can't calm down because they're not zombies, so shut up. but they're not, so just stop, okay? Because for it to be a zombie, they have to be undead, you know, they have to die and then reanimate. And that's the whole thing. So if that's not the case, then they're not zombies. So anyway, moving on. Santa Clarita Diet, season 3, really awesome. Definitely look forward to me talking about that whole show. I might even do it for my next episode because it's just so good of a show. It's just so hilarious. I've never been a huge Drew Barrymore fan. You know, I like her. Never been a huge, like, just like, because, like, the way it used to be when I would look stuff up is I would, when I really started getting into movies and stuff, excuse me, is, I would watch a movie, and then I would say, oh, I like that actor, I like that actor, I like that actor, I like that actor, and then I'd look those actors' filmographies up, and then I would knock off movies from that list, from those lists. And then, you know, repeat the process, you know, oh, I like this actor, I like this actor. So, like, just for example, when I was a kid, Top Gun was my favorite movie ever. I wanted to be Maverick so bad, you know, I was like, Mom, you got to give me a leather jacket, like a flight jacket. Couldn't get the flight jacket, so that was disappointing. But cowboy boots, the jeans, the whole nine, and, you know, but to be fair, I also wanted to be Will Smith in Bad Boys, so I did that too. But, so yeah, you know, and like, oh, Val Kilmer, go get some Val Kilmer movies. So, you know, like watching, like The Saint and, oh God, I'm blanking on some Val Kilmer stuff right now. But you know what I'm saying. And actually you should check out The Saint. That movie's really good. Spartan. Oh my God, Spartan. That movie's so amazing. I gotta talk about Spartan on this podcast very soon because that movie is so good. David Mamet. I mean, ugh, David Mamet. But, you know, and then Anthony Edwards. Oh, so Anthony Edwards, he's in ER. Didn't end up checking out ER for like a decade and a half until I got to college. But, you know what I'm saying. So, you know, just find those actors and then go down their filmographies and then find new, you know, find those new movies. Now I do it differently. I do it based on the movie most of the time. Sometimes I still do it by actor, but, you know. So, you know, I've never been a huge, huge Drew Barrymore fan, but she's so just perfect and exquisite as Sheila Hammond in the show. I mean, she is magnificent, you know, so amazing. I love her performance. I adore Sheila Hammond. She's just a really fun, interesting character. And, you know, the whole, just the progression, the arc of the character is just really, really interesting as well. Just really good show. And then Timothy Olyphant, as Joel Hammond is also perfectly exquisite. I mean, he doesn't, he's never done a lot of comedy, but he should, because he is so fucking funny, man. Like, he is hilarious in this show. I mean, just some of the stuff that you know, like the, like, reactions that he has to situations, and, you know, just like, I'm freaking out, man, and, you know, just like, all this just really silly stuff is just so awesome and amazing. The one thing that kind of bummed me out, though, watching season three was one of my favorite characters from the first two seasons wasn't there anymore, and they had to do an actor swap. Nathan Fillion is in the first episode, and then he's in the second season, and then there's another character who was a cop who lived next door to the Hammonds, and he and Joel would, you know, like, hang out in their man caves and smoke weed and, you know, like, jam on de base. If anyone gets that reference, you get bonus points. But yeah, they chill out and smoke weed and just, like, hang out. And, like, the reason, though, like, the reason I'm not angry about it, I was just kind of like, aw, is because that actor and Nathan Fillion are now both doing The Rookie. And they're, you know, and Nathan Fillion's the main character, and the other, I think his name's Richard T. Jones. I could be forgetting. I wasn't expecting to talk about The Rookie or this. But yeah, just that kind of always bummed me up. But it's like they have a new gig that's, you know, 20 episode a year gig. So it's like they're busy, you know. like, because if you don't know anything about how, like, television shows get shot now, you know, it's 18 hour days, and it's just day after day after day after day for, like, 9 months, you know, out of the year. And it's like when you do 18 hour days for 9 months. And you get that 3 months off, you're like, okay, if I'm taking another gig, it's going to be super chill. Like, I'm not, because it's like, nope, you know. And especially in a show like this, where there's, you know, running and gunning and driving and shooting, you know, and just, like, all this and super intense drama stuff that's happening, you know, it wears on you, you know, as an actor, because it's like, you have to be this character who's dealing with these situations. And especially, you know, when it wears so much on the character, that can really wear on the actor as well. And that's the danger of being an actor, is that you can get worn out. You can, you know, start to take your character home with you. And that can be, you know, not so great. So it's just, if anyone out there is looking, it wants to be an actor, I would just keep that in mind, especially if you're, you know, going after gigs in television. Because if you get a main role in a TV show that's just a network TV show that does 20, 24 episodes a year, and you're in all 24 of those episodes, and if it's like a action show or a drama, like, it's gonna wear you down a little bit, you know? So you just gotta be careful when you're dealing with stuff like that. Cause, you know, I mean, like, even some of the characters that I've played, you know, I've never had to go with any sort of extended schedule at this point in my career. But some of the characters I played have been, you know, kind of dark and not so, you know, like, you know, like I did a serial killer guy in this one thing, and it's like, dude, when you like start thinking like creepy dark thoughts like a serial killer would, it's, you start to like act like you can actually catch yourself like, and actually have a thought that's just like, whoa, okay, I'm gonna step back, I'm gonna go watch some Big Bang Theory and chill the F out, because that was not cool. You know, so it's just like, you have to be careful when you're an actor, because, I mean, especially me, like, I get really into my characters, and, you know, just because I'm trying to become them. I'm not, I hate the word, like, act or perform when I'm referring to my acting style, you know, like I try to be, and that sounds so pretentious, I know, but that's just how I feel about it. So it's just, you got to watch out if you're an actor, you know, just a little helpful hint. But that's the nice thing about these Netflix shows is that most of them are just 10 episodes, boom. And, you know, even if it's like something like The Ranch where they do, you know, like two seasons, quote unquote, air quotes, a year, it's actually part one and part two, so it's like there's just more of a break. And, you know, and when you're dealing with, you know, a half hour comedy, that's still gonna just be a little bit easier. It's still gonna wear on you a little bit because it's still 20 episodes a year, but, you know, it's a half an hour. You can get it done a little bit quicker because you're not shooting quite as much stuff. I mean, with the network shows, you're basically shooting a movie in a week and a half, 2 weeks. And that's a lot of footage that you have to shoot and then have it get whittled down to, you know, two 40-minute segments, if you will, episodes. So just like the whole industry has just really changed from what it used to be. And some of those changes are really good. Some of them are not. You know, like contracts are a huge thing that, you know, like we still do contracts. Like, they still do contracts somewhat similar to what they used to do. So, like, it used to be, you know, it when you were a movie star, you'd sign up to do, you know, four or five movies or, you know, X amount of movies for this specific studio. And it didn't matter what the movies were. They wanted, like, you were on contract, you're going to do whatever movies that they said that you were going to do. So, you know, you get to do this cool world, you know, this great World War II movie that's, you know, dramatic and it's got action and romance and, you know, it's a big hit. And then the studio's like, oh, I want you to do this, this little rom-com or whatever. And, you know, that one does pretty good too, because, you know, you're in it with, you know, Marilyn Monroe or whatever. And, you know, it hits. And then they say, oh, I want you to do a movie with this chimpanzee, and by the way, the chimp talks, but we haven't figured out how we're going to do that yet. And then that one bombs, and it's like, you know, you just didn't have any choice because you were just on contract with them. We do, it's still kind of similar, but more in the TV sense, where if a TV show looks like it's going to do pretty well, they'll put you on contract for a certain number of years, so they'll get, you know, two, three seasons or however many seasons out of you, and then you can and then depending on how well the show does, you know, and then they renew the show for season four, then it's time to renegotiate contracts. And so that's what happened in MASH when at the end of season three, when they had the turnover, and, you know, Colonel Henry Blake and Trapper John McIntyre left, and we got BJ Honeycutt and Colonel Potter coming in. It's because McLean Stevenson, who played Colonel Henry Blake, and I'm forgetting his name, but the guy who played Trapper, the contract negotiations just couldn't come to a head, and, you know, they wanted, you know, this, and the studio was like, no, we're not going to do that. So they were like, okay, we're done. And, you know, that can end up being, kind of a, blessing in disguise, because it can allow for you to do some dramatic stuff with it. So, you know, like at the end of season three, just really crazy, oh my God moment. I don't want to give it away. I know the show is, you know, 50 plus years old, but still, you know, you guys know how I feel about spoilers. So, you know, because, I mean, in that moment, too, especially, like, I can't spoil it because it's so well acted, so perfectly acted that, and so unexpected that when it hits, it really kind of rocks you to the core, you know, like, it really just shakes you up. So I don't want to ruin that for anybody who hasn't seen MASH. I've been talking. Yeah, this is a weird segment, guys. I get it. You know, I'm really all over the place. But this is just where my mind is going. You know, but yeah, Santa Clarita Diet is excellent. I would definitely recommend you checking it out. Stay tuned for an episode exclusively about that. Those three seasons that are out so far. Hopefully they'll renew it for season four because I gotta see more of this show because it's so damn good. It's ridiculous. Trailer Park Boys, the animated series, go definitely check that out. I would highly recommend at least watching the season previous, the quote unquote final episode of Trailer Park Boys on Netflix. I would definitely watch that first so you understand the transition into the animation just a little bit better. And I would recommend checking out the entire show. If you can, get your hands on the movies, because some of the movies are just magnificent. Like, Don't Legalize It is one of the funniest things I've ever seen, you know, and the ending of it, the third act, is just pure genius. So funny. But yeah, anyway, going to take a little break, and we'll be back to talk about Bonnie and Clyde and Frank Hamer and the epic duel between outlaw and lawman, discussing that through the Highwaymen film starring Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, detailing the law enforcement side of it, and Bonnie and Clyde, which Netflix graciously decided to add to their streaming, which stars the magnificent Faye Dunaway and the legendary Warren Beatty. So stick around for that. We'll be right back.
Hey, Nightcap listeners, this is Heath from the morning show Morning Mugamy. So if you want more Mugamy content and you just want to check out more of the Mugamy players, go over to Morning Mugamy wherever podcasts are streamed. That's Morning Mugamy, and we're a morning show. So start your day with me, and you can end your day with Jim. Again, that's Morning Mugamy, and you can find that wherever podcasts are streamed. That's MANGAMI players, all condensed into one word.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to be talking now about some Bonnie and Clyde stuff, specifically the 1969, I believe it was Bonnie and Clyde with Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, and Jane Hackman, directed by Arthur Penn, and also the new Netflix original film, The Highwaymen, starring Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, which depicts the Texas Rangers who hunted down and eventually killed Bonnie and Clyde. Let's start with Bonnie and Clyde. First is first, so let's start first with the first thing. it's interesting, because I'm actually going to have to kind of go back and forth with this, because The Highwaymen definitely changed my perception and like how I feel about Bonnie and Clyde, because Bonnie and Clyde used to be one of my favorite movies, and I still love it to death, don't get me wrong. Maybe not love it to death, I guess. I still really enjoy it. Or I guess I still really like it. Having seen The Highwaymen definitely changed how I feel about that movie and about the characters. And it's kind of thrown me for a loop. It's thrown my stuff all out of whack for this particular stuff, because, you know, when I would watch Bonnie and Clyde, I would be extremely, you know, excited and, you know, just enjoying this. This movie about these two people who, you know, just meet just very randomly, you know, like she's just hanging out in her room And she looks out the window, and there's this guy looking at her dad's car, and she's like, "Hey, boy, what do you think you're doing?" And, you know, he's like, "Oh, well, I'm just hanging out. What are you up to?" And, you know, then they go for a walk, and then, you know, like, just this very, you know, banal kind of just, like, nothing's really going on. It's just a guy and a girl walking into town, you know, like, getting to know each other. And then Clyde, you know, pulls a gun out, and she kind of dares him to go and rob the corner store. And so he goes and robs the corner store, and then they steal a car, and then, boof, they're off to the races. And then, you know, she's all hot and bothered and tries to, you know, get that vitamin D, if you will. And, you know, he is like, "No, can't do it. What he says is, you know, "I ain't no lover boy." And he's, you know, impotent, basically. And so it's just like, having seen that, and then having, and then, you know, you get further along, and it's like they're in love with each other, is how the Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway movie goes. Is like they're in love, like hardcore, but they don't fuck, you know. So it's the physical aspect of their relationship is them robbing banks and shit. And so, like, I used to think that was awesome, you know, like it was just this pure relationship that wasn't built on good sex, on physical emotion. It was just these two people who connected, and, you know, they also happened to like robbing banks and, you know, having nice things, you know, like having a nice suit, having a nice dress, having a nice car, but never really getting there because, you know, they're not very good at robbing banks, or, you know, like, just they're too loud and, you know, violent for them to, like, you know, do something like the Dillinger gang, like how they, you know, they disguise up and then they could stay in a hotel, you know, under false names, you know, because they're out of they're, you know, because they don't rob banks where they live, and, you know, they, and even when they're out of town doing something, it's like there's designated places where they rob banks, and then there's designated safe areas where they don't do anything so that nobody knows who they are. I mean, at least that's the idea in theory, and Bonnie and Clyde just didn't care about that really at all, at least in the Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway movie. You know, they were just willy-nilly, were, you know, just kind of out of control. And I used to like that because I was like, oh, they're, you know, very free spirits, and, you know, like, and they justify, you know, themselves, where it's like, you know, it's the Depression, nobody's looking out for the little guy, and, you know, you have these two outlaws who, you know, whenever they can, they try to help out the communities that they, you know, go through, and, you know, having, you know, and then, but having, like, really starting to think about this kind of stuff, it's like, you know, well, yeah, of course they're going to give a couple of bucks away whenever they can, because it's like they need the infrastructure, the network, if you will, of people to help them. It's more of a selfish thing than them actually being like, nope, we're going to help people. So, you know, I feel like they mask their selfish desire for wealth and for material possessions, with this thin veneer of generosity towards, you know, whatever community they're in, or whatever family happens to be, you know, helping them at one point or another. Which you know, just kind of it throws you, you know what I mean? Like, because for me, you know, I used these kinds of characters were the people that I liked, you know, and maybe not looked up to, but at least admired them for, you know, their for, you know, whatever reason it was. But now it's just like, no, I'm starting, you know, like that veneer, you know, that thin veneer, that mask has come off. And now it's just like, no, they're just these crazy bank robbing, murdering people who, you know, caused a lot of mayhem and did a lot of damage to some very nice people, including, you know, a lot of law enforcement. And, you know, when you look at, like, the actual facts of the thing, it's like they're, you know, they're not really people to be looked up to or admired or even liked, really, in any way. They're kind of despicable, you know. And it's not just, you know, like, this one movie, you know. It's like, when, like, I'm talking about, like, looking at actual facts of stuff. But, you know, I try not to get into that because I just want to talk about the movies. Because this isn't a documentary podcast where, you know, like a true crime podcast or whatever, where, you know, it's like, Bonnie and Clyde did this, and Bonnie and Clyde did that, and Bonnie and Clyde did that too. You know, I just want to talk about these characters in the context of the film, you know, the way that they're portrayed in the films. And, you know, like, and that's the tough thing is when you see something that has a differing perspective on it, you know, especially when you go from, you know, because, I mean, like, there was that Emil Hirsch and, what's her name? Bonnie and Clyde. That was like a 2-episode miniseries or whatever it was. And that portrays Bonnie and Clyde, you know, differently from the 69 Arthur Penn film. And then The Highwaymen is completely different because it portrays them as the villains of the piece, you know, and they're not, you know, nice at all. They're, you know, like the Highwaymen opens with a jailbreak, and, you know, these guys, you know, are killing the prison guards and whatnot, who they're just doing their job, you know. Like, there's always, you always have to worry about, you know, with, like, prison guards and cops and stuff like that, like, abuse of power and abuse of authority. But I feel like that's a lot more prevalent nowadays than it might have been back then in the Depression. Because the thing is that, like, you know, if you had a job, you had to do whatever you could to keep that job. And, you know, depending on who you were working for, like, you could possibly get away with some more sadistic type stuff. Or you just, like, have to do your job. Like, follow the letter of the law and don't do anything to jeopardize your standing with the boss. Because if you do, you're going to be out on your ass and you're not going to have an income. And, you know, you're not making that much money as it is because it's the Depression. Everybody's cutting back. So, you know, if you had a job, you had to do whatever you could to keep it. And, you know, I feel like when you're in that kind of a situation where it's like, I got to do what I have to do to keep my job, you can't, there's not a lot of room for you when you're in a position of authority to, you know, cross the line too much. Now, this, I'm speaking kind of generally. If you go into, like, more higher crime areas like Chicago or New York at the time, where, you know, organized crime was very prevalent, then you have a lot more opportunity for cops to get away with doing dirty shit, because the power structure is there for these organized crime bosses like Al Capone and whatnot, who, you know, they just own so many people in positions of authority that, you know, if it actually was more dangerous to not be a dirty cop than it was to be dirty, because so many people are on the take, and it's like, well, look, I need a few extra bucks anyway. If I don't do this, I'm going to be ostracized and outcast. And then that creates the kind of environment, like, especially in New York, where you go, you know, 40 years later in the 70s, and you have Serpico, who's, like, you know, the only honest cop on the force, quote-unquote. And, you know, it just being so dangerous for you to not be dirty and not be on the take and not be taking bribes and not be taking cash and not be taking money from raids, or, you know, taking drugs from a raid and selling that, or, you know, offering protection to criminals and things like that. But if you're in rural, you know, where, you know, bumfuck wherever, and, you know, you have this community that thrives on its moral values, then, you know, for you to take some money from a criminal and to be in a position of authority is not so great, which is really ironic because the flip-flop of that is that you have all these people who you know are suffering the effects of this mass depression across the entire country, where just nobody's got any fucking money, and the quote unquote good guys, the good citizens, are the ones who are taking money from criminals, because they, you know, because the criminals themselves prop themselves up to be these hero types, but also, you know, the newspapers do it, and then the citizens themselves, you know, kind of just made themselves think that these guys are the good guys. You know, the bank, because, I mean, think about it, you know, you have a couple of people roll through town and rob your local bank that foreclosed on your house and wouldn't give you a fucking loan and, you know, didn't even bother to help you. And then these guys come through and rob that, and they give you, you know, $100 from the bank that, you know, took everything away from you, and you're going to be thinking to yourself, like, oh, no, these are the good guys. Like, the, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, they are the good guys. You know, John Dillinger and them, they're the good guys, because the banks are what are taking everything away from me, and so they're taken from the banks. So that means that they are the good guys. And the fact of the matter is that it's just not, that's just not true. You know, just because, and don't get me wrong, like, the, like, banks, I'm not a huge fan of banks, you know, like, and the whole, like, credit thing, like, I don't ever want to have a credit card, but apparently it's been explained to me on several occasions that I need to have a credit card because I need to have good credit, which doesn't make any fucking sense to me, because I think it makes a lot more sense for you to give money to somebody who's never had to take money, who's never had to borrow money before. So it's like they have their shit together, and it's like the one time they don't have their shit together is when they need a loan. So, like, that is the kind of person that you would probably want to give a loan to, as opposed to someone who borrows money all the fucking time, which is what a credit card is. It's so you can buy whatever the fuck you want, and then you just pay that bill at the end of the month. But that's borrowing, you know, like, you're borrowing money and then you're paying that money back. So it doesn't, like, the whole credit thing just doesn't make any sense to me. So, like, banks and all that kind of nonsense just, like, drives me insane thinking about finances and whatnot, because it doesn't make any sense why my credit is non-existent when I haven't borrowed anything. You know what I mean? Like, I've never had to borrow from a bank. I've never had to get a loan. I've never, you know, or any of that stuff. So it doesn't make any sense to me that, like, someone else who's, you know, had to take out 3 bank loans and has 15 fucking credit cards is a safer bet for a loan or something like that, because their credit is, quote-unquote, in good standing. So, you know, that whole thing kind of went off on a little... kind of got off topic there. But, yeah, you know, like Bonnie and Clyde is definitely a unique sort of a thing, because they actively engaged with the populace through media. You know, like, the equivalent of Bonnie and Clyde in modern day terms would basically be, you know, like, they would basically go on Instagram or Twitter or something like that and, like, live stream a bank robbery, and then, you know, as they're driving past you know, like a house that's been foreclosed or whatever, like, you know, they chuck, you know, a fucking bag of money onto the porch and be like, there you go, guys, now you can buy your house back, and live streaming that, you know, making a, you know, a Facebook video or whatever, because that's what they would do. You know, they would roll through, they'd rob a bank, and they'd roll through a place, give some money away, hide out for a little bit, and then Bonnie would write something and then send it into the newspapers, and the newspapers, in their infinite wisdom, would print this crazy shit, you know, whether it was some poem that Bonnie wrote, or, you know, some, like, some story of some kind, just like, you know, like, this is the way it is, from, you know, from the pen of Bonnie, and, like, what do you, like, and these newspapers would print this shit. So, you know, you have these criminals who are, you know, very actively engaging with the populace through media, and that changes the game, you know what I mean? So when you have this kind of infrastructure and this network of people who are willing to help you, and, you know, you're aided in that because people that you may never have met before are reading about you and maybe reading the stuff that you're sending into these newspapers and just being like, yeah, no, I'm on board with this. And so you could roll through a place that you've never been and have friends there already that are willing to hide you out from the law. And so that just made these two particular bank robbers a lot tougher to catch, even though they were so kind of amateurish and, you know, they didn't really know what they were doing. So, you know, like, especially when you watch the original film, you know, like, they really don't seem to know what they're doing at all. But there's also, like, certain things that, you know, just aren't portrayed. Like, it's not a movie that was made with the intent of getting everything as historically accurate as possible. So, you know, there's, like, a few characters whose real-life counterparts, you know, got really angry about how they were portrayed in the film. You know, just saying things like, that is not how it happened at all. Not even close. So, Arthur Penn, you can basically go fuck yourself. And then there's, you know, there's all these, like, rumors and, you know, just, like, tall tales or whatever, you know, legends and, you know, just all, and just, like, crazy theories and stuff about Bonnie and Clyde, like they were cousins in an incestual relationship or, you know, this or that or the other thing. And, I don't really want, I'm not going to get into that stuff because, again, I just want to talk about the movies right now. But, you know, like, there's all these different way things and stuff like that that, you know, people have thought about and, you know, think is how it was or, you know. And the movie is just the movie. It doesn't really strive for this historical accuracy that The Highwaymen does. It's just kind of a movie that's, you know, very violent and it has this very improvisational feel to it in certain scenes, like when Gene Hackman shows up to meet Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. It's just this, like, they just set the camera and let Gene and Warren just go crazy with the scene and just do whatever they wanted to do, basically. So it's a very interesting feel. Now, also, in the previous episode, I was talking a little bit about Bonnie and Clyde stuff, and I have a retraction I need to make on a statement. First time for that. I said that Bonnie and Clyde was the first movie to have a gun and a person in the same frame shooting, and the bullet hit the person. That's not true. Arthur Penn, I was reading the trivia for it, and Arthur Penn incorrectly assumed that he was the first director to do this. But in fact, it was Ennio Morricone and Clint Eastwood who did it in Fistful of Dollars the year or two before. I think Fistful of Dollars was 67 or 68. That I was incorrect. It's actually Fistful of Dollars that had the first instance of a gun being fired. And the victims of the bullets in the same frame as the gun as it fires. So, my bad. oopsie. Jim made a little bit of a boo-boo. First time for that, though. I mean, like, I'm 53 episodes in or whatever it is, and that was the first big mistake I've made, statement-wise. So, let's hope that's the last one. okay, so enough about Bonnie and Clyde. Let's get to The Highwaymen. So, this movie is really, really good. I really like it a lot. Kevin Costner, I'm a huge Kevin Costner fan, which I may or may not have mentioned previously on the show. I don't think I've really gotten into any Kevin Costner stuff on this, on Nightcap with Jim. But anyway, huge Kevin Costner fan, huge Woody Harrelson fan, love them both. I believe this is the first movie they've done together. And they've worked with a lot of the same people, like Woody did Natural Born Killers with Oliver Stone, Kevin did JFK with Oliver Stone. So they've bounced around and, you know, a lot of stuff like that, but they're just so good together. Like, their chemistry is really fantastic. And this movie is just really, really great. You know, it's from the director of The Blind Side. I don't know what the director's name is, because I didn't look it up. I haven't seen The Blind Side, so, and The Blind Side didn't really seem like my kind of movie, so I just never seen it, but I might check it out. This movie really strove for historical accuracy, which I really genuinely appreciate, especially, I mean, like, when it comes to true stories, you know, I've said it before, like, I really don't believe in dramatization for drama's sake. Real life is typically more dramatic than anything you could create in your own head. The exception probably being Jordan Peele, as I was mentioning in the first segment when I was talking about Us. I mean, like, with the exception of, like, Jordan Peele and, like, S. Craig Zahler, like, those guys can somehow create stuff that's way more dramatic than real life would, like, way more crazy and insane than anything in real life. But for the most part, real life is way more dramatic than anything you could come up with for a movie or a TV show. So for me, when it comes to true stories, if you're telling a true story, I believe you have an obligation to the real life people to get it right. You know what I mean? Even if you're portraying someone like Bonnie and Clyde, who, you know, are criminals, and, you know, they distorted their own view of how they wanted to be perceived by the media and by the public. I think that, like, in the end, you know, they like, if they saw a movie, like, if they were alive, obviously, but if they were alive and they saw a movie about themselves, I'm not sure when it comes to a like people like that who, you know, purposefully distort how people perceive them, whether or not they would appreciate a movie that's as historically accurate as possible depicting them. But you can bet that the Texas Rangers who tracked him down, the law enforcement officials who were involved in this hunt, they probably would appreciate being portrayed realistically, you know? So this movie really went all out to get things as right as they possibly could, going so far as to filming the climactic ambush where these Texas Rangers ambushed Bonnie and Clyde and took them out, filming that at the exact location where the real ambush took place. So you've got Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson and these other actors portraying these, you know, lawmen actually in the blind, in this, you know, ditch on the side of the road where their characters were in, you know, in the 30s, getting ready to try to apprehend these two outlaws. And then you have, you know, the two performers portraying Bonnie and Clyde in, you know, the exact same car in the exact same spot, you know, with everything in the car set up as closely as possible to the reality of it. And that elevates a film that tells a true story to another level of storytelling and authenticity, you know? When a movie quite literally takes you to a place where something really happened, that is just something that can't be replicated in any other way. You know, it doesn't matter if you find a road that looks exactly like that road. You know, like, even if where you're shooting it looks different now, if you can shoot on that actual location where the real thing happened, like, that's what Public Enemies did, you know, whenever they could. Was they would, you know, Michael Mann wanted to film at the actual locations whenever possible. So that hotel shootout that they have towards the end of the film, towards the end of the second act, if you will, at that hotel with, you know, Babyface Nelson and Dillinger versus the Phoebe, the FBI guys, that's the real hotel where that shootout took place. You know, Johnny Depp is firing from the window that John Dillinger was firing from on that night. you know, at the end of the movie when he comes out of the Biograph Theater, that is the actual street where, you know, and where Dillinger and where Johnny Depp, you know, gets shot, and where he falls flat on the pavement, that is actually where John Dillinger was shot and killed. Like, Johnny Depp's face is exactly where John Dillinger's face was when he got shot. But that street didn't look like it did in 1930, whatever it was, when Dillinger got shot. You know, they had to redo the entire street to make it look like it did back then. And so when you do something like that, when you're able to shoot in an actual location where things really happened, it just adds something magical to what's happening, because you're literally taking the audience there to the place. You know what I mean? I've talked about this before, but like, you know, transporting the audience to a place, it's something that when it's done just right, it is sublime. You know, there's just nothing like it. And it can be done when you're telling, you know, something fake or a fantasy thing like Lord of the Rings or whatever. Because Lord of the Rings especially, like, they took so much time and effort to transform New Zealand into Middle Earth that when you're watching it, you're not really thinking like, oh, look, it's Queensland or, you know, whatever park in New Zealand, you know, where they filmed the thing. You're just like, oh, it's Middle Earth, because they just put so much effort into making you believe that this is this actual place, as opposed to like, oh yeah, we just shot it in this little park in the middle of Queensland center. But, you know, so it's just something really, really special when a filmmaker decides, you know, like, they're going to tell a true story and they make the effort to get all the facts right. And that's what's great about this movie. And it's also just really enjoyable too, like, because like I said, I used to, like, because the way that the ambush is portrayed in Bonnie and Clyde is more of, it's a straight up ambush. Like, they didn't bother giving Bonnie and Clyde any warning or anything like that. It's a bunch of cops who just opened fire, you know, and they didn't, you know, they just, you know, they're just like, and just killed him outright. Whereas the historically accurate depiction, you know, Kevin Costner's dude walks out in the middle of the road and he's like, and he says, "Stick him up." So it's a, you know, cop who's actually, you know, like, freeze, hands in the air, and then, you know, then if they make, then if the subject makes a threatening display, that's when you can open fire, and then that's what happened. Because the Bonnie and Clyde film also depicts, you know, Clyde as being out of the car, and you know, Bonnie, you know, kind of like, after she gets shot, she's like, you know, like, half hanging out of the car, and, you know, like, they show archival footage at the end of The Highwaymen of the aftermath of the car and you know, stuff like that. And, you know, they're just in the car, you know, because, like, it was a very, very well set up ambush, you know, just like, oh, we're gonna set something up so that these guys, you know, have someone they trust sitting there, and that's gonna stop them. Then we can, you know, try to apprehend them, and if they make a move, we're ready for that. So, you know, I just appreciate historical accuracy whenever possible. So, like, and especially if you're going to show, you know, archival footage of a thing, like, you had better had made what you did on set that day look as much exactly like that archival footage as possible. I mean, there's no excuse for not. You know what I mean? Like, you have the picture of what the actual car looked like after it had been shot up. your car better look exactly like that. There's no excuse for it not to look like that, because it's not like you don't know what the car looked like. It's right there. You have the picture of it. You can see exactly where every single little bullet hole is and where each little spatter of blood is. You can see where, you know, how the sandwich that they were eating, you know, flipped over, and, you know, you can see exactly how everything looked. And so there's no excuse for you to not make it look exactly like that. You know, it's so simple. I don't know. I think maybe Michael Mann spoiled me in that regard, because, you know, the true story stuff that he's done has just been so, he's just been so kind of fanatical about that historical accuracy that I guess he spoiled me a little bit. And yeah, it's just a really good movie. I really liked it. I might actually watch it again tonight, because it was just so good. Yeah, just a really great movie. Really, really great movie. I mean, it's like an upheaval of emotions, you know. Because now, you know, because Netflix, after they put The Highwaymen out, they put Bonnie and Clyde up, which I really appreciated, because I was like, well, I want to talk about The Highwaymen, and I want to talk about Bonnie and Clyde. So I guess I'm going to have to buy it. But I didn't have to, because Netflix put it up. So thank you, Netflix, for making this episode that much easier to make. But yeah, you know, it's just like, watching it again, I was just like, I don't enjoy this as much as I used to, you know, like, after having seen how the law did it, it's just like, I just didn't like it as much anymore, you know. I mean, especially because, Kevin Costner's character, Frank Hamer, is depicted in the Bonnie and Clyde film as being the villain of the piece, And that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, you know? I just didn't like that. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. It's like, it's definitely a very interesting exercise to watch, motion picture projects that are about the same events, but are from different perspectives. And also varying degrees of historical accuracy, if it's taking place, if it's based on a true thing, you know. So it's a very interesting exercise, I have to say. Very, very interesting indeed. Yeah, well, I guess that's it. I'm all talked out. Wow. 35 minutes. I need some water. Yeah, I guess that's gonna do it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you stuck through all the way to the end, you're a real trooper. I really appreciate, you know, when you guys stick around throughout the whole episode. I know my episodes are really long and they're really talky because I'm the only one here. So I appreciate my listeners. I appreciate you guys. You know, it's just, again, you know, I've been saying this a lot lately, but, I wouldn't be able to do this if you guys didn't listen. You know, like, if just nobody was listening to my episodes, then I couldn't continue making them. So I really appreciate it so much when you guys listen. Thank you so much. I love you guys so much for it. Yeah, that's going to do it. That's going to be our show for tonight. Thank you so much for listening again. Thank you so much, so much, so much, so much. If you like my show, you definitely want to go and check out Morning Manga Me with host Heath LaBombard. He just put out a new episode on Friday. It's a really good episode. He has a fun conversation with this guy about some of the Marvel stuff and this very interesting fan theory involving Ant-Man and Thanos. it's a pretty funny conversation. So yeah, definitely go check out Morning Manga Me. Check out Manga Me Players across all the different social media. We got YouTube up. We got Instagram going on. We got our Facebook page. Check that stuff out, because we're doing all kinds of stuff for you guys this year, you know. I was streaming in Batman, the Telltale series, and I'm planning on doing some more streams in the future, so you're going to want to check that stuff out. We've just got a lot of stuff, exciting stuff going on this year. All right, guys, thanks so much for stopping by for a nightcap. Good night, and I love you guys. Thank you so much.
The Nightcap with Jim podcast is a Among Me production, hosted by James Smith, produced by Heath LaBombard and James Smith. For more Among Me content, visit Among Me Players all across the social medias.